of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Today I'm continuing my sermon series based on the book, The Slow Church. You will remember from last month that the idea of slow church comes from the slow food movement that seeks to create locally sourced, sustainable food grown and prepared by identifiable growers and chefs, in contrast with the sameness and the homogeneity of fast food. Today, I am reflecting on both stability and patience. We are familiar with the idea of stability from the rule of St. Benedict. Benedictine monks take a vow of stability, which means that they're not going anywhere, even when the going gets rough. They stay where they are and continue to worship and serve God and God's people in that place. In slow church, stability talks of the church whose worship and service is rooted in its community. On Friday, Esther, Karin, and I were at the Chamber of Commerce Business Expo, talking to our neighbors about the abundant shop and the church, and about their lives and their businesses. One woman said to me, "The thing I like about your church is you do ministry to all sectors, to everybody." What a compliment that was. Now we have been in Los Osos for 30 years, and now we have a building that everyone sees and recognizes. And now that the abundance shop is so much a part of many people's lives, I think we can finally say that we have stability in this community. Many people know who we are, and they ask about concerts and talks, even if they're not ready to talk about God or about church. And more recently, they are seeing us actively involved in working to make Los Osos a truly compassionate community. Last week I asked for some of you to go to the Traffic and Circulation Subcommittee of LOCAC to argue against the proposed ordinance against people sleeping in their cars. 3 of the 13 people at that meeting were from St. Benedict's, and the committee took no action on that proposal. This was wonderful work on our part, and I thank those who represented us. In addition, Esther represents us on the Los Osos Community Coalition, and we co-sponsored the recent community meeting on the homeless. Maybe this is a community meeting on the homeless. As a result of that meeting, Trinity United Methodist has offered their facility for a regular community dinner on Monday nights. And I hope that we at St. Benedict's will participate by providing dinner on a monthly or a bi-monthly basis, much as we do for the Prado Day Center. So please let me know if you can help with that. These are all the actions of a stable church which is beginning to transform its neighborhood. In this morning's gospel reading, the Samaritan woman, who you will see on the screen, exemplifies some of the important qualities of stability. She engaged in conversation with Jesus, forming an important relationship with a stranger who was in her neighborhood. And then she told others about him, and together they offered him and his disciples generous hospitality. Hospitality and generosity are important practices of stability. But the shadow side of being around for a long time is that we can feel superior, thinking that we know how things should be done. And we can also use our embeddedness to accumulate wealth and power, which we then use for our own ends. Hospitality and generosity guard against these shadow tendencies. As we welcome others and as we share what we have, we are changed by the relationship. The people of Sychar were changed by Jesus' visit. We too will be changed by those who come, whether they are neighbors who never set foot in the church or new church members. Although we have always had here a concern and a heart for homeless persons, and a few members have been actively engaged in seeking solutions, it is only as the homeless have become more visible in Los Osos and as we have welcomed unhoused people as part of our faith community, that we have found new ways to connect on a more profound level and new ways to help. As the body of Christ in this place, we are called to act as Jesus did, talking to strangers and making new relationships, embodying the freeing and healing good news of Jesus together. We each have different gifts that we bring to this work. Sharon has a particular gift of making friends with strangers. But together, we can be the ones who bring the living waters of God's love to this community, becoming a channel for God's healing love to be poured out in Los Osos. This doesn't happen overnight. We have had the Abundance Shop for about 25 years. It is a fixture in Los Osos. And over that time, over those 25 years, the shop has changed. At different times, we've had different perspectives about how it can best serve God, the church, and the community. Today, we see it as a place where we can share the love of God, not only through providing a center for reusing and recycling stuff, but also as a place where hurting people can be welcomed and given opportunities to receive and to give. It is not just a place to give things to those in need, though we do that. It is not just a place to raise money for the church, though we do that too. It is a place where we can become attentive to our neighbors and discern how we can better share the love and the peace of Jesus. Patience is important as we seek to be God with flesh on. Our culture is tuned to instant gratification. I have a question, I Google. I want to watch a movie, I instant stream. I want to connect with a friend, I message them. But the ways of God are often slower and require that we pay attention for more than the few seconds it takes to Google contemplative prayer. But our call is to compassion, which is derived from the Latin word which means to suffer with. Our society does not find it easy to take the time or to have the presence to enter into the pain of others. Theologian Phil Kennison says, although I am sure it has never been easy to be present to and with those who are suffering, our culture's three cardinal virtues of productivity, efficiency, and speed powerfully disincline ourselves to place ourselves among those who weep. Few people seem genuinely willing to slow down and offer real presence to those who otherwise weep alone. As a result, so many of us suffer in deadly silence and isolation, devoid of any real human contact, let alone human presence. Avoiding suffering reduces our relationships to shallow ones because we take shortcuts that steer us clear of human pain, difficult situations, and hurt people. Yet compassion calls us to walk alongside those who are in pain, those who are mentally ill, those who continue to make bad choices, whether or not they seem to appreciate us. Patience is not passive waiting, but patience is the way that compassion is embodied in our lives. It has been said that patience is the hard but fruitful discipline of the disciple of the compassionate God. Patience means to enter actively into the thick of life and to fully bear the suffering within and around us. Bearing the suffering means to be with the pain of ourselves and our neighbors without rushing to find a quick fix. Okay. Oh, well, I don't have it. But many of us get delivered to our driveways that paper that's called the neighbor or neighbors, something like that. And it usually goes straight into the recycle bin because it's basically an advertising paper. But it caught my eye this week because on the front there was an article about San Luis Obispo being like the seventh best place in the world to live, or at least in the country. But what was really interesting, if you actually read the very, very brief article, was that although we are seventh in the country and we have really high scores for things like environment, we are something like 85th for people feeling loved and feeling a connection with other people. Isn't that amazing? So many people are crying out for community and connection. And we are blessed to have that community and connection here at St. Ben's. But it doesn't always come easily. It's not always easy for newcomers to break into the circles of friendship that we've developed. And so we need to add patience to our cardinal practices of hospitality and generosity. We extend the love of Jesus to one another and to the stranger, when we are willing to take the time to be present to each other's concerns, and when we have the humility to share our own needs and weaknesses. I'm sorry about this. You know, I was in a rush and I didn't save it, and then I closed my computer and it's just a mess. So, as we practice stability and stay in relationship with each other and have patience even when the rector screws up the sermon, we can learn patience by forgiving and being reconciled again and again. There will always be people in the faith community who do things that annoy us. There will always be time when the decisions the parish council make don't seem like the best thing, or when your best idea doesn't get picked up by other people, or when someone tells the same story yet again and at great length. But we are called to live patiently together as the body of Christ with Jesus as the head. And it is in this process that we become more and more Christ-like. You don't need me to reflect on the divisive world that we inhabit right now, where people with other ideas can quickly become enemies. The spiritual work of patience calls us to approach those potential enemies in a spirit of compassionate curiosity, looking for places to connect and not allowing ourselves to build barriers by making judgments or basking in ideas of our moral superiority. We are called St. Benedicts, and we owe much to the monastic path. Monastic communities have long taken seriously the challenge to embody the work of Jesus, the way of Jesus, in their particular places. And so these ideas of stability and patience are not used to us as people of St. Benedict's, are not new to us as people of St. Benedict's. We are called to be the embodiment of Christ in Los Osos by slowing down and taking Jesus' teachings seriously, living them out not just in our hearts, but us in our civic and community life together as well. So I have a question for you. I have two questions for you. And I'd like you to get together in pairs or small groups or just meditate on your own. And those two questions are, how are we called to embody Jesus in the community? And in what ways do we as a church practice compassion by entering into the suffering of others, whether in the church or in the community? So two questions. How are we called to embody Jesus, and how do we practice compassion by entering into other people's suffering? So let's take a few minutes to talk about those things. So how are we doing? We reflected a bit on how difficult it can be to actually ask for help, and so it's difficult to share our own suffering with other people as well as taking the time and being present to other people with the suffering they experience. So again, how are we called to embody Jesus, and in what ways do we practice compassion? Anybody like to come up here and tell us what you thought?
I was just talking about, you know, I work at the Morro Bay Library, and we have some interesting people that come in. But I've learned if you treat people with mental illness with respect and dignity, they actually will treat you in the same way. We have one kid, he's probably in his 20s, who has had many problems. And not only with medication, his mom's been trying to get him, you know, some help. But he comes into the library now, and he's an absolute pleasure to be around. And we talk to him with dignity, and we give him respect, and he does the same thing back to us. And when I told his mom about it, it just made her light up. And I think that's what we're meant to do. And if you treat people with dignity and respect, instead of the first impression is, oh my God, get away from me, I think this will be a lot better place.
Thank you.
I have for quite some time been thought processing myself on the word compassion. And it has bounced around my head for, you know, more than a couple of years now. And this is a very interesting question that has been posed to us. In what ways do we as a church practice compassion? I have trouble with that. And that is because, to me, at this time, compassion is an emotion that comes from within me. And I have a terrible time trying to picture my compassion matching everybody else's compassion so that we can be compassionate as a group. And I still haven't worked all that out. The other part of the question is by entering into the suffering of others. And I think it's important that we recognize that we don't recognize the suffering of other people. We go through our lives just sort of, and every now and then we'll come across something that will trigger us into an inkling of an emotion that we can call compassion within ourselves. And then we have to find a way to either act on that compassion or say, oh, that's okay, maybe later or something else. But it's a matter of individually recognizing what's going on around us, what's happening around us. And even in our nice community here, we have people who are suffering that we don't know about. We don't talk about our suffering. We don't talk about our problems. We talk about the good things, and that's nice. That's the way we've been put together or wired as people. But I think we need to think of ourselves as discerners of other people's problems. Thank you.
About a year ago, I went on a Buddhist retreat called Developing Compassion. And I thought I'd learn a few tips to learn to be compassionate. But I was very surprised because the whole day, the leader talked about self-compassion. And I thought, how interesting. Is he ever going to get to compassion? But he said that in his long, over 20 years experience with people is that that's where we really need to start with, the self-compassion, that so much, even in meditation, that's the primary hindrance that he finds that people face. You know. And I think that in our own tradition, we come from a Christian tradition that often emphasizes that we are sinners, that we're guilty, we have original sin. So where does the good come from? Certainly not from ourselves. But then there's that phrase, love thy neighbor as thyself. It doesn't say love thy neighbor and hate thyself, or love thy neighbor instead of thyself. So we're all kind of beginners in learning, I think, to be self-compassionate. I'm aware as a, just as a psychologist, that so many people would never say to others, even their worst enemies, the things we say to ourselves. We really have to start with ourselves. And that doesn't mean being narcissistic. It just means caring for ourselves.
One thing that history teaches us is the inevitability of change. You may not like it, but change there will be. I want to come back to Earth for a moment. I'm wondering about two things. I get concerned about the change in the Roman Catholic Church by the library. When we came to this community, I don't think there was a single Hispanic family that went to that church. Now I understand that it's almost 100%. I've wondered about that. Not that it's any of my business, but it concerned me. The other thing is about the abundance shop. Is there a lot of elation over the fact that we've changed from one place to another? Is everybody much happier now that we are where we are? Because it's been a long time since I've been there. So I don't know all that's been going on. And I was wondering if everybody's much happier at the new location.
Pretty much.
Yes, Tom, we are very happy at the new place. Very, very. And that's when I think of compassion, I get to see it every Wednesday when I go to the shop. With the people that come in, with the people that shop, with the people that just come in to talk, with the homeless. And it's such a wonderful feeling to just say, go over there and get what you need. And they are always gracious. They never just go in there and grab a bunch of stuff. Is it okay if I take this pair of jeans? I said, yeah. Do you need some socks? Do you need a shirt? And they get it, and they're happy, and I'm happy. And I, like I said, and Tom, every Wednesday I see compassion.
I want to say something that Gio said to me and pick up on something that Don said, which is we don't always know other people's suffering, and even here in our congregation. My sister-in-law is a professor of Russian, and she said that her Russian friends will ask, how are you? And you'll respond, oh, I'm fine. And they'll say, no. How are you? You know, and they want like the whole existential thing. And what I shared with our group is how I admire Reverend Sharon. When she goes out and she sees a homeless person, she will stop and she'll go over. And what does she do? She doesn't start handing them things. She starts talking with them. Where are you living? How are you? And, you know, you'll see people out there and they'll stop and hand somebody a dollar, or they'll stop and hand somebody a can of tuna. Well, maybe somebody doesn't need money. Maybe they don't need tuna. How are you? We need to keep asking each other that question. Thank you.
Thanks, Kat.
Hi. I just wanted to say that in the course of my work, because I'm an LVN and a home health aide, I work with mostly people 90 plus. And in this community, there's a lot of them. And these people, they've outlived their husband or wives. Usually they've outlived all their friends. Most of them can't even get out of the house to go to a senior center or anywhere where they might meet other people. And the lady I have now, she has 5 or 6 friends. And that's happened to all of them. And I usually invite them over and, you know, we just talk. I might be the only person they talk to all day. And you watch their faces light up. You watch them just come back into the world because somebody is interested in them. And we forget because in our lives we're really busy. We all have agendas out to there and things to do. But with compassion, someday if the Lord lets me, I'm going to be 90 plus years old and have nobody to listen to me either. So that's important. And our society has gotten a lot more insular because I think in the early 1900s, we had these big extended families. You know, you had father, mother, kids, cousins, grandmas, this great big deal. After the Second World War, it kind of came down into a nuclear family. And now, I think, because most of us rely too much on social media, it's just become even more isolated than that. It's important for people to break through that isolation and just be there for each other. That's what Jesus did. I know I work lots of hours now, but when I don't, I'm going to have a block party on my block. I want everybody to come out. I want to know who my neighbors are. And what all you guys do is wonderful. I don't get the time to do it with you guys, not yet, but it's great. Just keep it up.
Thanks, Margaret. This is obviously a conversation that can go on for a long time. So, Betty, you get the last word this morning.
Thank you. Anne and I think probably what I got from our conversation was that we really are just brought up to be the best you can be, to look the best you can be, and in a way to be superior, you know, because that's what parents expect. You know, they want the very best. This really does lead to a feeling of superiority, which is one of the most horrible things. It seems that Christ wanted you to give, you know, not to be looked at or perform or anything like this, that the most important thing is to pass on God's love that you have experienced. And I'm sure Anne probably has a total. We really appreciate just the chance of us sharing like this.